fools will never remain free if they are not willing, if need be, to fight for their vital interests.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem.
Praise Cowboy and pass the ammunition.
The Restoration Hour with Pastor Eli James.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here. This is Eurofolk Radio. Today is April 13th, 2024, and we're going to continue in our series on the Lost Tribes of Israel, a wonderful book that we discovered thanks to a lady friend who sent that to me via email. And we're going to be studying this book again this week, probably doing about three or four episodes of it. And I just came in from out of town, and I was up in Springfield. We had a meeting up there, a really wonderful meeting. And so I'm just getting settled in, just got the computer turned on, and etc. So got to get into the chat room. And so let me open up the document that we have in my other browser here. And it is not the faith of our fathers. What the heck happened to it? Okay. All right. I guess I'm going to have to go into the website, because I know I had a link there. I just had it up on the screen, but I had a couple of people stop by real quick, and I must have lost it while I was talking with them. Let me give this another try right here. Lost 10 Tribes. And this is by, let me find the author's name again. Joseph Wild. The Lost 10 Tribes by Joseph Wild. And we did the preface and chapter one, basic stuff. And I'm gonna jump over chapter two, Israel the Gates, and I'm gonna go to Israel and territory. And of course, by Israel, he does not mean Jews. He means our people, the true Israelites, the white, Adamic, Aryan, Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Caucasian people, and nobody else. The Jews are not any of those people. They are not Israel by any stretch of the imagination. So. Okay, so here we go. And he has this to say. Again, this is Israel and Territory, Discourse 3. Has subheadings here. Promises to Israel, material nature, location of the tribes in Christ's day, God's providence, British and American rule, life from the dead, teaching the nation's peaceful arbitration, England and Russia, Afghanistan falls to Anglo-Israel, God's political geography, Anglo-Saxon evangelization, Russia opposing it. Well, I'm not sure Russia actually opposed it. Talks about what period of time this was, because Russia was a Christian country, did not oppose American evangelization during the Civil War. So I don't know when this would be, but we'll find out. British and Russian outposts in contact, Whale of Judah, that's W-A-I-L of Judah, Earth's girdle. Here we go, quote, enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtains of thine habitations. Spare not, lengthen thy cords and strengthen thy stakes, for thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the nations, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Isaiah. This is 54, Isaiah 54. Usually the Roman numerals are in caps. I think this is 54, verses 2 and 3. In the writings of the prophets, the feminine gender is often used when speaking of the house of Israel, and the masculine when denoting the house of Judah. Quite frequently, Israel is spoken of as a divorced woman, as being cast off, and as being barren. Judah remaining faithful to the throne of David and the temple service, and abiding in the land much longer than Israel, is presented as one married. So you will understand Jeremiah 3:8 when he says, "And I saw when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorce." Again, Isaiah 1:1, "Thus saith Yahweh, where is the bill of your mother's divorcement whom I have put away?" Yet though Israel was divorced, forsaken, cast off, and desolate, she was to have more children than married Judah. So the verse preceding the text says, "Sing, O barren, thou that didst not bear, break forth into singing, and cry aloud that thou didst not travail with child, for more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Lord." Then come the words of the text bidding her enlarge the place of her tent, or dwelling place, to stretch forth her curtains so far as to cover the new-gotten habitations. To spare not, that is, to be not tardy or slow, in lengthening out her cords, that is, her influence, and strengthen her stakes, that is, her authority, but to break forth on every hand where there is an opening, and inherit the seed of the nations, he uses the word Gentiles here, and make the languishing and poverty-stricken cities of the nations to be inhabited. Now, it's interesting, he uses the word nations here instead of Gentiles, okay? But this is the inconsistency of the King James Version as well. And so he's basically mimicking the inconsistency. In this conquest to go on and fear not. These exhortations are given and promises are made to Israel after she had left Palestine. No one can say truthfully that they have yet been fulfilled in no degree or sense. Well, of course, this is 1889. Unless they find such fulfillment in the conquest of the Saxon race. Amen. These predictions cannot apply to the Jews, for they are few, nationless, and without a government. Touching the past history of both Judah and Israel and Palestine, we shall find it to be barren of victories, territory, acquisition, and number in comparison to other nations. They have never occupied the land given to Judah and Israel in Palestine. We shall find it to be barren of victories, territory. Okay, I just read that. Sorry. They have never occupied the land given to Abraham in fullness, or even in part. The only part they have occupied is Judea. In Solomon's time, they bear rule only over a part of it. The nations and heathens have occupied it more and longer than the sons of Abraham. But what failed to be accomplished in the past is held grandly in reserve for this day in the next few years. God will remember his promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and David. He will remember it to fulfill it in spite of hell or earth, until hell will freeze over before Yahweh's promises fail. We have been blind and guilty in the past, unconscious of our origin and as a natural consequence, ignorant of our place and special work. In interpreting the word of God, we have been lavish in spiritualizing and greedy in materializing, overlooking the fact that 9/10 of the Old Testament is a material history about one people, and that through them, God's special providence was to flow to all other nations. Amen. And the New Testament plants the life and prosperity of the nations, it says Gentile world. The nations upon the course of the progress of Israel, that is the non-Israelite nations. God said to Abraham, "In thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed," and that's the unconditional promise. Genesis 12:2, not Genesis 12:3, which is the conditional promise which the Jews quote and claim is about themselves, which it is not. To these sheep, Christ declares, he was sent. Where were these sheep? They were scattered about in Central Asia. Well, Central Asia, in those days, they were calling Central Asia Turkey, and the area up north of there in the scriptural language in Cappadocia, Galatia, Pamphylia, Lydia, Bithynia, and roundabout Illyricum. From these very regions came the Saxons. From here they spread abroad north and west, being the most Christian of any people on the face of the earth then as well as now. Their reception of the gospel gave them power over the surrounding nations, to whom they were, as it had been foretold, witnesses for Jesus and providence in a very special manner. What then, we say with Paul, will be the blessing of Israel, recognized and fully restored to God's favor? If so much good was carried and bestowed upon the non-Israelite nations, I'll use heathen instead, because Israel was scattered, how much and what are the blessings in store for those nations when Israel and Judah be restored? Well, we've been restored in America. Paul compares it to a resurrection, like as when the barrenness and desolation of the winters is supplanted by the fruits and beauties of summer. Quote, if the casting away of them be the reconciling of the world, what shall be the receiving of them be but life from the dead? Well, you know what? We need a resurrection of our people. The vast majority of our people today are the walking dead. Okay. All right. So in the, Iran has attacked Israel. Oil prices to the moon. Okay. I'm wondering to what extent this is a real attack, or is it another, I can't wait for prices. Okay. So yeah. Okay. Maybe the global war has begun. Maybe Iran has just had enough of Jewish, pestilence. And we'll see. We'll see. Or maybe it's just a false flag to raise gas prices. Okay. Maybe I won't be driving to Bardstown anytime soon. Because let me tell you something. I'm amazed. The prices down here is only $3.19 a gallon. When I got to Carbondale for the eclipse, it was $3.89 a gallon. And when I got down to Kentucky, it was back down to $3.19 a gallon. And there's some places, Springfield, Missouri, for example, their stations charging only $3.09 per gallon. All right. That's really low. I mean, given the inflation rate, I don't see how gas prices could have been, stayed this low. Maybe they want to do a really dramatic, like 3 or 4 times more expensive. And really scared a snot out of us. So by doing that, well, we anticipate stuff like that. Yeah, this may be a false flag. We'll see. Okay. All right. So everybody's going to fall for these false flags, but we'll see what actually comes of it. The real disaster is Gaza. Netanyahu, in fact, while I was on my trip, I stopped at a gas station, used the restroom, and somebody had written on the wall, F Biden, F Trump, and F Netanyahu. Okay. So they don't like any of them, right? And they shouldn't, because they're all in cahoots with one another. Now, maybe the Iranians have been bought off. Okay. Another fake war. I'm not so sure. Let's follow this. Okay. But back to this wonderful book. All right, the 10 Lost Tribes and 1882, and probably the number 1882 will reveal itself, its meaning, toward the end of the book here, okay? All right, so, and he continues, it is reasonable to suppose that this world is subject to the providence of God. Such a supposition is grandly sustained by the laws and operations of nature without, and the experience and intuitions of the mind within. And I believe this providence to be all comprehensive, bounding and cognizing all things, present, past, and future, both small and great, claiming the ages for its measure, the universe for the field of its operations, and the infinite as the source of power. All right, this Joseph Wilde has a very good writing style. Quote, the Lord Jehovah reigns, let the earth rejoice, unquote. Let me persuade you to thoroughly believe in the precision, the intimacy, and the completeness of this providence. This doctrine we need to fully learn and accept. Quote, In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, unquote. And it is he who, quote, hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with a span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales, and the hills in a balance. Aye, and more, yet closer still, does this providence approach us in our affairs. By him kings reign, and princes decree judgment. He bringeth the princes to nothing. He maketh the judges of the earth as vanity. Even closer yet, for without his permission, a sparrow cannot fall to the ground. And so intimate is he with us, that he knoweth the number of the hairs of the head. Now, all this kind of Bible instruction is intended to teach. You can see that Joseph Wilde knows the Bible 100 times better, 1,000 times better than any modern Judeo preacher. Those people stand humiliated by this person, by Joseph Wilde's knowledge of the scriptures. Now, all this kind of Bible instruction is intended to teach the nearness of God to us and his interest and intimacy with nations and nature. Let us not think for a moment that nations can rush to war and be outside the circle of providence, as we were just discussing. If Yahweh wants war between Iran and Israel, let's have it. Let's have it. I think the Muslim world at this point in time is chomping at the bit. Because if those damn kikes try to demolish the Dome of the Rock and build a so-called third temple, the unprophesied third temple, that's when all hell is going to break loose. So maybe they're I just had a thought. Are they using Iran's attack on Israel as an excuse to demolish the Dome on the Rock? Oh boy. That might be. Yeah, right, brother. Can't wait for the red heifer and the third temple. I think we just figured it out, folks. They're using Iran just like they use Hamas to strike the first blow so that they can have a real heavy retaliation. It's retaliation time. That's what it is, folks. They're using Iran. And I'll bet Iran is being paid off. I bet Iran is even involved in it. Because, let's face it, all of the kings of the Muslim nations are not real Muslims. They are basically materialists who use the Islamic religion to control their own people. That's what they do. Okay. So the regime in Iran is probably very likely paid off. And it all depends on how much the Iranian people are going to suffer, probably very little. I don't think Israel will dare strike Iran. Maybe a small target here and there, but we'll see. We'll see. You know what? The Israelis have been assassinating Iranian leaders the last few years. I mean, time and time and time again, they've been assassinating Iranian leaders, and Iran has not yet retaliated. I think the Jews are getting rid of the truly nationalistic Iranian leaders and substituting them with their internationalist so-called leaders. I'll bet that's what's happening. Let's watch this very closely and see what happens. Okay. All right. Let us study to know God's mind, his plans and purposes with the nations. For the rest satisfied that his plan will finally be accepted by men and nations, and his purposes will prevail. Kings may plan, diplomats may diplomatize, scientists may analyze, theologians may teach and preach their isms, and politicians may make platforms and construct rings, yet none nor all combined can stay the hand of God, and no Jew or Iranian can change it. Quote, he doeth according to his will in the armies of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. He can initiate, permit, modify, and destroy. Once we truly recognize the sovereignty of God over us, conceit will lie dead at the feet of humility. Let us hope so. Our people need to stop their materialistic conceit. That's the real problem. I know listeners to your folk radio, I have stated a million times that prosperity is the chief enemy of true Israel. When we get really prosperous, we get conceited, we get complacent, we get the church of Laodicea, sorry, lukewarm, tepid, even the toast won't melt butter. That's how lukewarm modern Judeo-Christianity, and that's only practiced by white people, okay? The church at large has but a slender hold upon this great doctrine. That is correct. I mean, he is so eloquently stating biblical teaching that the churches utterly ignore or aren't even aware of. They look upon the great movement of wars and strife, rising and falling of nations, as looks the country stranger upon the railway engine for the first time. The whirling wheels, the steam and smoke and burnished boiler rivet his attention so completely that he sees not the driver in his car. So men are dazed with the show of pomp, of courts and councils, the United Nations, with the harangues of legislators, Joe Bidenstein, Donald Trumpstein, and of course, Bibi Netanyahustein. These are just actors on the stage. They march to the beat of the Rothschilds. The harangues of legislators and the march of regiments, that they discern not the master hand behind all that directs all. Satan is the prince of this world, so Yahweh has given the prince of this world rulership over us temporarily to see which one of us can see through the charade and stay faithful to his son, Yahshua Messiah, Revelation 12:17. The remnant that will survive is those who keep the commandments of Yahweh and have the faith of Yahshua Messiah. Continuing, verily thou art a God that hidest thyself. No, friends, English bravery nor American ingenuity will not account for all that England has done on the line of victories and the inventions that we Americans have made, and the marvelous and rapid growth of these United States. As God said long ago through Moses, so he could say today, for heavenly counsel was given to the children of Israel on entering the promised land with a design of suppressing their pride and enabling them to form a correct idea of their success in driving the strong and greater nations of Canaanites and Philistines. Speak not thou in thine heart after that the Lord thy God hath cast them out from before thee, saying, for my righteousness the Lord hath brought me into to possess this land. But for the wickedness of these nations the Lord doth drive them out from before me. Not for thy righteousness or uprightness of thine heart dost thou go to possess the land, but for the wickedness of those nations that the Lord thy God both drive them out from before thee, that he may perform the word which he has sworn upon thy fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Let us not be proud, even though we actually get involved in these events. It's Yahweh's doing, it's his will, and we are rewarded by subjecting ourselves to his will. Understand, therefore, that the Lord thy God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for thy righteousness, for thou art a stiff-necked people. Deuteronomy 9, verse 4. By the same rule and for the very same reason that Israel conquered Palestine, does England go on from conquest to conquest until, of course, the 20th century. And because God remembered to perform his promises made to the patriarchs upon their seed, America was opened for the Puritans, who are without doubt the descendants and representatives of Manasseh, of whom God said he should be a people, a great people. The rule of England and America over other people is to be as life from the dead. That is, whatsoever country England conquers and rules, it is better for the people and the country and the world. They give to the people a liberty that they would not have given unto themselves. They develop the resources of the country as never before, and by trade and commerce bless the people and cause them to be a blessing unto others. Well, that was true for a while, but until but the Rothschilds and other Jews having piggybacked in on the British Empire began perverting everything in India, in China, in South Africa, you name it. When the British Empire invaded, the Jews rode on their backs. The Great Whore, the international banking system, and the Jewish religion working together to oppress, parasitize, and conquer, and really oppress. I mean, bitter oppression. The Opium Wars were amazing. The attacks upon the white people of South Africa, excruciatingly evil, sheer pain and anguish for the Boer people, etc., etc. And better still, they make known to the conquered ones in due time the riches of faith in Christ. Well, I don't think we're instructed to do that. We're just supposed to exemplify the faith in Yahshua, not the military prowess. So we have no hesitation in saying, a thing patent to every unprejudiced observer, that the aborigines of the conquered colonies of Great Britain are treated better by their conquerors than they ever treated themselves. The Africans in the conquered colonies of Africa are better off under British rule than those colonies or portions unconquered are, but not the Boer people, because the Boer people are white and hated by the Rothschild. The hosts of India enjoy more, fare better in every grace and virtue and all that goes to adorn and develop mankind under the British government and protection than they ever did or would under self-government. To this, I wholeheartedly agree, the only exception being South Africa. So the French, Germans, Italians, Russians, Spaniards, and a numerous progeny of immigrants into this country fare better in every way with Manasseh, which he assumed is the United States. I just say that Ephraim and Manasseh are the English-speaking world of Israel than they did in their own lands. Of course, both in England's rule and America's, there are many defects, but taking all in all, the good will outweigh the bad, and more so as the years roll on, until, of course, the Rothschild banking system takes over. Okay, so John Hagee will definitely get his 2 cents worth of, you got to bless Israel by sending more money, okay, and help the devil. Let's continue. True, an arbitrary purpose and an individualism is seen on the surface, yet under it all there is the hand of God. The farmer is free as to what he sows, used to be. But the divine, without interfering with this freedom, regulates the harvest to plenty or famine. The Saxon people, England and America, stand in a new light to the world, includes Germany too and many other nations, stand in a new light to the world by the teachings of the Bible. Being Israel or the 10 lost tribes, they become at once the chosen agents of God for the glorious purpose of evangelizing the whole world. No, not evangelizing the world, but to simply demonstrate our power, our God-given power, and the fact that we will be a blessing to the world, okay? And this is not to convert them. We're not supposed to convert them to our religion, and we're certainly not supposed to interbreed with them. We are colonizers. The word Hebrew means colonizer. We're the only real colonizers on this planet. And finally, by reducing the whole earth to the plane of universal liberty and peace, well, again, this is written in 1889. And by the way, Christianity in America at this point in time, the 1880s, 1890s, was a very optimistic, we were a very optimistic people. And the optimism was so great that we really thought there was a golden age ahead of us. We thought the kingdom was coming right around the corner. Never could our people have imagined that the international Jew would infiltrate every aspect of our government and drag us down into the slime and the mud, which they have done. And that's where we're wallowing right now. Okay. Though we weren't really supposed to evangelize the world. We were simply to set the example of how the Anglo-Saxon race can improve society for them. The worst thing we could have ever done is to evangelize non-whites. It was necessary that these two nations should first be taught the art of meditation, or mediation, rather, for the ends of peace. That they should learn and show to the world that national disputes and grievances can be settled without an appeal to the sword. Well, I mean, come on, you know, the invading colonizers under the Spanish and the Portuguese and the British to these nations came with the sword. No doubt about that. So we should have not come with the sword. And it was Benjamin Disraeli said, he's the father of British imperialism. Imperialism is not a nice deal. People resent imperialism. They resent being overthrown. And that's how it worked. So even though we did build up their economies and their infrastructure beyond anything they had ever imagined, there's no doubt about that. Nevertheless, it was done with the sword, and it should not have been done with the sword. Hence we have, and what is much better, the world has, Geneva and Alabama, and the Fish Bounty Treaty of Canada and the United States. Not all the press did on either side, nor all the carping and blustering of individuals could prevent the happy consummation of both these treaties. To God be praised, for they are prophetic harbingers of a better day coming. So this author is full of that optimism that prevailed in America, and I think also in Britain, in the 1880s and 1890s. And certainly into the early 1900s. But that's when things began to turn sour, when Jacob Schiff gave the Japanese $20 million to make war against Christian Russia. The global war was instituted at that point in time, 1905. And even here in America, the Jews assassinated the president who actually got us into the Philippines, should not have done that either. Okay, that's occupation. And we basically took those people and occupied them militarily against their will. Okay, we were not to occupy them against their will. The rule in Deuteronomy chapter 20, when Joshua was going into Canaan land, and except for the Canaanites, which he was instructed to destroy and obliterate, any of the other nations, he gave them, okay, you will either allow us to occupy your nations and we will, you know, treat you fairly, or we will make war against you. So the British did not give that choice to the Indians or the Chinese, certainly not to the Boers. And we did not give that choice to the Philippines. Already, the Jewish money power was in control of our governments then, as they are now, even more so. Okay. So, folks, yeah, the optimism here is real. I mean, you can sense it, that he's really being sincere. But I disagree that the military occupation against the will of a conquered people is a good thing. Okay. England, by necessity, was forced to find new countries to provide for her multiplying population. Really? Was the population of England really growing that large? I never even considered that. I don't think it's actually true. There's no reason why the English need to move to India or China or South Africa, I can understand. But not to India or China. You know, well, they were what? They were the people who administered the British rule. Then she is forced to enter other nations as a missionary. No, we're not. We're not forced to enter as missionaries. That's been a disaster. She, with Manasseh, is chiefly responsible for the evangelization of the world. Now, don't forget Germany and England and Ephraim. Okay. For now, now he talks about Russia. Let me finish this sentence and see what he has to say about Russia. So And of course, they are at work all over the world for England, and the United States send out more missionaries than all the world beside. Well, that's just too bad, right? Our missionaries have ruined our lives by importing non-whites, non-Israelites into our nations. Russia needs no land for colonization, for now her inhabitants number only 34 to the square mile, while England numbers 889. That's nothing. 889 people to the square mile? That's overpopulation. If we take in all the territory under Russia and England, even then England has more to the square mile than Russia. Oh, I think he's talking about the British Empire. Russia comprises about 8 million square miles, and England, with her late additions, leaving out the United States, numbers about 9 million. Joining Ephraim and Manasseh together, they own one-fourth of the whole world, namely about 13 million square miles. The whole earth numbers 51 million square miles. So you can see the apex of our rule, Anglo-Saxon rule, on the planet before World War I was unquestionable. The white race ruled the whole world. Although when you start making war on people, certainly against their civilians, then you do not please Yahweh, okay? So, and then you invite bankers to corrupt your governments, okay? And that's exactly what happened. Besides, Russia is not a missionary country. Well, that's understandable because their language, it was so far removed from English that English is to be our new language, not Russian. And very, very few people in the world speak Russian. Plus, the Orthodox Church was not a missionary-style church. She neither sends any nor accepts any, being at present the only nation closed to missionary operation and toleration. That's good. That's a good thing. That's why Russia lasted as long as it did. That's why the church in the East lasted so long. I think 1,500 years by keeping the Jews out, by not trying to convert Jews, by not doing business with Jews, preventing them from holding positions of office, not allowing them to be bankers, as did Russia, okay? So a lot of good things can be said about the Orthodox Church vis-a-vis the Jews. Okay, the past few years, Russia has gained rapidly in territorial power, with the conquest of Bukhara and portions of Turkestan, or independent Tartary. She has added some 800,000 square miles. Now, this is interesting. Tartary. Tartary. There's a nation called Tartary, independent of Russia at this point in time. The history books have utterly forgotten about Tartaria. Why? Okay, in my opinion, Tartaria is a holdover from Lemuria. And though it did not sink under the ocean like the rest of Lemuria did, and there were huge cities and buildings, and there were probably, I'm sure, there were giants among them as well. But nothing is ever said about Tartaria in the mainstream. Nothing. At the beginning of the last century, the Russian advance forts were 2,500 miles distant from those of England. At the close of the century, the distance was 2,000. Then in 1810, it was reduced to 1,000, and since 1855, it has been reduced to 400. And now, of course, they want it reduced to nothing by getting control of Afghan. Okay, I think he's talking about... Okay, so Russia was advancing... and of course, well, I mean, you're talking about two empires who were bound to be in conflict. How wonderfully clear are the fulfilling events of the prophecy. This king of the north, here's where he makes his mistake. He equates Russia as the king of the north when we know it's the Khazars. The Khazars, the Ashkenazi Jews who took over Russia and created a communist, the Bolshevik regime there, okay? The czars made lots of mistakes. So have our leaders made lots of mistakes. And I think Nicholas II, to his discredit, he became an imperialist, making war against other countries needlessly. Okay, there's no point in making needless war against populations that have no gripe against us. There's no point in us doing that at all. But nevertheless, we are colonizers, and we can do that peacefully. We don't have to make war to be colonists. They're plain and simple. We don't have to make war. So let me jump over here. So, you know, he's got the basic Judeo-Christian point of view here, which, you know, history shows is mistaken. So I'm going to jump to part five, discourse number five, Israel and language. Headings, Latter-day Prophetic Promises, Time of Israel's Revival, Pyramid Testimony, British Island Population in 1882. Okay, so here's the year 1882. Affinity between English and Hebrew, Cell of the Honeybee, Origin of Language, Lion of Languages, Foreign Testimony, All Tugs Indigenous but English, The Pre-Millennial Token. Is that, I don't know what he means by indigenous. He's talking about German, Danish. These are not indigenous. They were brought to the New World, I mean the Old World, by Israel. Quote, for then will I turn to the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of Yahweh to serve him with one consent. Zephaniah 3:9, and that is obviously English. In the last two discourses, we called your attention to two prophecies that are now fulfilling. They are on a parallel line of time and history. The first had reference to the rapid accumulation of the lands of the earth by Israel. Accepting the Anglo-Saxons as being the children and descendants of Jacob, it naturally follows that the prophetic blessings and promises made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and their heirs should find a fulfillment in these, the latter days, and that such fulfillment should be found in the English nation. Among the Jews? No, sorry. And in the United States. It is easy to see and believe that the curses prophetically pronounced on Judah and Israel have been fulfilled, especially on the house of Judah, the promises to the house of Israel now being grandly realized. England is in possession of the isles of the sea, the coasts of the earth, the waste and desolate places. The heathen is her inheritance, and she is inheriting the seed of the nations and causing their desolate cities to be inhabited. Now, if it's simply a matter of trade and colonization, peaceful colonization, that as the Boer people colonized South Africa, the Boer people did not make war against the blacks at all. The only war they fought was against the Zulu, because the Zulu were exterminating the Xhosa tribe. And so they defended the Xhosa tribe against the Zulu, and they won. The Boer people won, thanks to Yahweh backing them up. From the taking of Jamaica by General Penn in 1655 to the peaceful cession of Cyprus, the course of this little island nation has been onward and upward. And if her conquests and progress are not amenable to prophecy for an interpretation, then the wonder is still greater. The facts are with us and must be accounted for in some way. Even here in America, we conquered the American continent. It wasn't so much by military conquest. The way things worked, you had the French and the British colonizing the country, for the most part peaceably, until the Indians started realizing, hey, wait a minute, there's more white people than us now, and the French and Indian wars. So the Indians took sides, one side against France, the other side against England. George Washington was serving the British in those days. And though they got caught in the middle, it wasn't like a deliberate plan of extermination of Indians. In fact, America went out of its way to try to preserve various Indian tribes. And they wouldn't be living on reservations with gambling casinos if we had decided to simply exterminate them, as the Jews do by exterminating peoples, whole peoples. Okay. So then, and look at, not Jamaica, but Haiti. America has rebuilt Haiti three times, trying to set up black regimes so they can self-govern and they simply cannot do it. It is impossible for black people to govern themselves, period. It's impossible. They don't have the intellect and they don't have the desire. Many other races have exceeded them. Till 200 years ago, the Anglo-Saxons were not in this respect distinct from other races. Indeed, for centuries, they were distinct rather for their weakness in multiplying power and number. Well, actually, we had many internecine wars between the Anglo-Saxons and the Romans, okay, basically also Israelites. We've had more wars amongst ourselves than probably any other nation, although American Indians may be next in line of having internecine warfare. Many other races have exceeded them in this particular, but no sooner do we come abreast of the latter-day time than we find the laws of centuries changed. In thermal science, it is an axiom that the heat expands all bodies, and of course that cold contracts them. But to this general rule, there is one beautiful and benevolent exception. It is in water. For if we start with water at 32 degrees, we find the remarkable phenomenon of cold expanding all below 32, and heat expanding all above. If we take water at 212 degrees and withdraw it from heat, it will continue to contract till we reach 32, then the law is reversed and the water expands. Now, the reversion of this law at this particular point is wonderfully expressive of divine forethought and benevolence. By such a change, ice is made to float in water and so save our lakes, streams, and wells from being frozen solid. As this exception is to thermal science, so is the law of reproduction to Israel in this day. This people, who have been behind other races, now at an appointed time step to the front. The law seems to be reversed, and that too is for a benevolent purpose, for the very purpose that they might be able to fulfill the mission assigned to them in these last days, to occupy the new lands and evangelize the world. One prophecy seems to call for the other, for what would be the use of the lands without the people, or the people without the lands? It is an amazing fact that Queen Victoria should bear rule over one-third of the population of the whole earth, and that Israel, including Manasseh, should own one-fourth of the land. However, Queen Victoria's prime minister was none other than the evil Jew, Disraeli. She did us no favors, and he is the father of British imperialism, and the father of the military invasion of the Far East. We did them no favors, nor ourselves favors. A huge mistake by Queen Victoria. But this amazing fact is made reasonable when we accept the Queen as being of the seed of David and an heir to the promises. So even David made mistakes, right? Solomon made lots of mistakes. Saul made lots of mistakes. Jeroboam, you name it. The vast majority of our kings and queens have made horrible mistakes. God, speaking through Moses, said he would punish to reform Israel for seven times. Ah, seven times prophecy. And seven times prophetically understood means 2,520 years. If we allow that Israel were carried captive in the year 725 before Christ, then Israel would come into freedom or be reformed about 1795. Because if we add 1725 to 1795, we get 2,520. Up to this point, they were to be robbed of their children and to be few in number. See Leviticus 26:22. In the year 1795, Israel, we actually counted from 745 BC to 7076 AD. But 1795 is good. It's right after the U.S. Constitution. In the year 1795, Israel were to be relieved from these curses, and about this time, the special law of reproduction came into operation. Or if we take the Lamentations of Hosea 6:1-3, come and let us return unto Yahweh, for he hath torn and he will heal us. He hath smitten and he will bind us up. After 2 days, he will revive us. In the third day, he will raise us up and we shall live in his sight. Then shall we know if we follow on to know Yahweh. His going forth is prepared as the morning, and he shall come up unto us as the rain, as the latter and former rain unto the earth. Now, I think the proper consideration is 745 BC. That, and see, speaking a lot of Manasseh, that's the year that Manasseh, the half-tribe of Manasseh, was taken captive by the Assyrians. And 2,520 years later, the United States of America was born. Okay? So the seven times punishment was ended in 1776. And lo and behold, a new nation, which was, and this is Isaiah 66, verse 8. Who can believe our report? A nation was born in a day. We're talking about America here, folks. Not that stinking rat hole in the Middle East. They falsely call themselves Israel. Okay. So, and America was great because America was Christian and law-abiding. We followed the laws, the dooms of King Arthur, Albert. Albert the Great, in establishing the laws of Moses, and our Constitution is pretty much based on the laws of Moses and the traditions of Israel. So we're talking about 1776, and of course his date, 1795, is close, but I don't see any major event happening in the year 1795, certainly not to, it only applies to America in 1776. Okay. By this passage, our day and the special providences of this, but he's really close. You rarely hear any Judeo minister talking about the seven times prophecy. By this passage, our day and the special providence of this period are mournfully and graphically referred to. Here a day stands for 1,000 years. He's talking about the Hosea 6:1-3. And yeah. I will visit after 2 days. Okay. So, but if that's the coming of Christ who perished in 33 AD, then after 2 days, being 1,000 years for each day, then 2033 will be the end point before he returns. And he promised those days would be shortened. Otherwise, no flesh would be saved. So we're getting very, very close to the end, folks. Very close to the end. The prophet here says we were to be revived or raised up on the third day. So if you again take these 3,000-year days, you will find that two of them are to be completely passed, and during the third we are to be raised. Yeah, at the very beginning. The number we have given, 2,520, exactly meets the interpretation, 2,000 complete, 520 make a majority for the third day by the 20 over the half. Okay. That's an interesting interpretation, and it's a good interpretation. I'll have to look that over and compare it to the idea that it refers to Christ and his coming, but we'll see. These prophetic figures tally well with the existing state of things. About the beginning of this century, England assumed to lead the world. It is a remarkable coincidence that in the last century, the question of how to multiply the population was a subject of debate and legislation in the British Parliament. But what legislation failed to do, God and his providence did at the appointed time. I would say the English population increased right here in America, right? And I don't know to what extent it increased in the occupied territories of the East and South Africa, probably not very much. He basically had a bunch of bureaucrats overseeing and military people overseeing the occupation. Okay, a short paragraph here. It is a curious fact and well worth noticing that the famous witness of the Lord of Hosts in Egypt, the Great Pyramid, forecasts what the number of Israel and Judah would be in the year 1882. Oh, okay, now here's the year 1882. As Israel is symbolized in the Grand Gallery, it is found that the cubic contents of the same in inches is about 36 million. Thus, by some, this is interpreted to mean that inches stand for individuals. And if so, then England proper will have this number in 1880. Whether this is a true interpretation or not, we all know that these figures will be about right. The Queen's Chamber of the Pyramid symbolizes the number and the condition of the Jews. No, he's wrong about that. The Jews are not in this. Okay, so he's British Israel. Even though he has argued earlier that the Jews are not part of Israel, he seems to think that the Jews are part of this prophecy. I don't see that at all. So anyway, so let me evaluate this a little further before continuing this next week, because he's made a couple of statements here. One, which is intriguing, namely that the prophecy in Hosea, is it 6 or 8? I think it's Hosea 6. Let me back up here and see if I can find it. But anyway, I will return after 2 days, whether that the beginning day is 33 AD or whether, as he assumes, is way back in 725 BC. So let me see if there is any merit to this claim. It's very intriguing. It may be correct, but the business about the Jews is obviously false. There's no chance that the Jews are prophesied in the Great Pyramid. So the Great Pyramid, the capstone that the builders rejected is, of course, Yahshua Messiah. And when he returns, he will rule the earth, okay? He will be the capstone. He is the capstone. And that's that kingdom made without hands prophesied in the book of Daniel. There will be no third temple because the third temple has to be built with hands. And this kingdom is built without hands, okay? So, folks, a couple of very interesting propositions here with regard to the Great Pyramid and with regard to the proper interpretation of Hosea. So I'll have to look at this. I don't know what 1880 is, 36 million Englishmen. That's prophesied in 1882. I've read a lot of pyramidology books, but I've never heard this as a condition or a prophecy. So I'll check into this and see if I can make sense out of this by next week. Okay. So I've given myself an assignment here. All right. But as a British Israel book, actually as a Christian identity book, because, this is an American writing about the true Israelites and has up to this point in time, although he's not exactly saying that the Jews are Israelites here, he's saying that some of this prophecy affects the Jews somehow, but I don't think so. But we'll unravel this. He's starting to get a little more complicated than I was expecting, and we'll see what we can make sense out of this next week. So, folks, thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition, and we are going to play the outro music. Here we go.
Free people will never remain free if they are not willing, if need be, to fight for their vital interests.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Praise Yahweh, and pass the ammunition.
The Restoration Hour with Pastor Eli James.